had to look out and see who's here and who's on vacation now. So I think the Kents are gone until Thursday now, and we might have, I don't know when the other folks are coming back. But anyway, let's go rather quickly tonight. We'll not spend a whole lot of time in review. We talked about this lesson is dealing with what the work of the church is not. But before we really get into that, it won't take us that long to deal with that. Very simple things that we often point out with regard to what the work of the church is not, that brethren are involved in through the years, things that are unscriptural and therefore sinful. I'm not going to do a study in this on authority. I haven't included that in this. And I've done studies with you before on authority, and those of you who've been members of the church for a while, you know all about authority. But it's very important to keep that in mind throughout this series. And particularly Colossians 3 at verse 17, whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. That's very important. And it's always important to connect the dots when it comes down to authority. What I mean by that is to connect the dots to what? To the sinfulness of doing things without authority. Like, a lot of people would shake their head up and down if you ask them, do you need authority? Now, sadly, there's a lot of people who would say you don't need any authority to do things. I've heard that come out of even members of the church. But for the most part, people would acknowledge we need to go by the Bible and do things in Bible ways. They just don't really understand the consequences of not doing that. And that's significant. I don't know how many Bible studies I've had over the years where people get the idea of Bible authority and they agree that we need Bible authority. And then at the end of the study, they go back to a denominational church doing all kind of things without Bible authority. And it's really interesting to me. A lot of times in home Bible studies, people, as I go through it, people will bring up examples of things that the church they attend do that aren't authorized. Like, they'll bring them up to me. Well, I don't like this about this church and what they're doing. I don't like that. But they don't connect the dots. They don't realize, all right, then if you go back to that church, you're involved in sin. And so we really need to understand. We need Bible authority for everything that we do, and there's consequences for not having that authority. Like, it's sinful to get involved in a work that is not authorized by the Word of God. And we'll look at some of those works. But the first thing, and we looked at last night, is, you know, first we need to understand what makes something a work of the church. And the answer is twofold. Number one, something planned, provided, participated in by the local church. So anything that we plan and that we provide and participate in is a part of the work of the Brown Street Church of Christ. It doesn't matter if it's scriptural or unscriptural, it's a part of our work. We want to make sure everything we do is scriptural. But whatever it is, every time we have a gospel meeting, we put that together, we plan it, we provide for it, we participate in it. That's the work of the Brown Street Church of Christ. When we go out and pass out flyers, that's a work of the Brown Street Church of Christ. Anything that falls into that category. Now, just quickly, we were making the point last week. This is where we basically left off with emphasizing that in dealing with all of this, we're talking about the work of the church, the collective work of a local church, not individual action. And that's very, 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 very important. Because that's where brethren have gotten off over the years. They just can't see the difference between that. And I don't believe I kept the quotes up there. I did not. But I had quotes, if you were in here last week, from brethren that are clearly teach that there is no distinction between the individual in the church. They back in the day, they would always say things like I'm the church and the church is me. Things like that. Oh, that's cute. And, you know, whatever, but they always emphasize whatever the duty of the individual is, that's the duty of the church. Whatever the duty of the church is, that's the duty of the individual. And they really push that. And they really, really believe that. And so I'm not going to put those quotes back up, but I hope that if you weren't here last week, I think all of this will be on the internet or whatever. I hope you can get a hold or ask me. I'll get you a copy of those quotes. And the reason that's important to me is because I don't want you to think I'm just building a straw man. In other words, it's very easy when you're looking at something, particularly something that's controversial, to just make up a position that someone takes and then defeat it. Like, brethren have done that, liberal brethren have done that with us a lot. And if we're not careful, we can do the same thing. I mean, that's something we need to make sure we don't do. Like, you kind of say, well, I think they believe this. All right, and so you just set that for, and then it's easy to knock it down. But the problem is they don't really believe that. That doesn't help anybody. And so I want you to know, when I tell you that there are brethren that believe that whatever the individual can do, the church can do, I'm not just making that up so I can make an argument, because it's an easy argument to defeat. They believe that, and they always have. Go all the way back to Alexander Campbell. He came out of a denominational situation, and he brought some of his denominational views in with him. So remember what we have already covered. What is a denomination? A church of churches. Alexander Campbell always believed that, till the day he died, that the universal church is made up of local churches. And so some of these things were made popular very early on. But if you look at the screen, we left off looking at this passage, and this passage clearly demonstrates that there is a distinction between the individual Christian and the church. If any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them. The man and the woman are individual believers. Most translations just have woman there. And that's just because the word there, the Greek word there is just the word for believe, but it's in the feminine gender. And so it just, most translators just put woman. And the women evidently were the ones who took care of the widows, had the large part of that in the first century. But whatever the case, it would be applicable. It really, again, the Greek word is pestos, and it's believer. And so it obviously is referring to an individual, male or female. A believer can do certain things. If a believer has widows, let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened. So there's a distinction, obviously, between the individual and the church, and there's obviously a distinction in what they can do. And if you flip, we didn't do it last week, but just quickly, if you flip over to first to the whole passage there, you notice the things that the church can do with regard to a widow, or as the ESV says, who they can enroll. This is 1 Timothy 5 and down at verse 9. 1 Timothy 5 and at verse 9, it says this. 1 Timothy 5, verse 9. Let a widow be enrolled if she is not less than 60 years of age. Now, to be enrolled means to be taken care of financially by the church. So the church can take care of widows financially. We can use the Lord's money for that. But there are certain qualifications. And one is that that if the widow is going to be enrolled, she has to be 60 years old. Now, let's say my mother was still living and she's a widow. Let's say my father died before she was 60. Let's say he died young and let's just say my mother was 59 or whatever, 58. Could I take care of her financially? Of course I could. There's a distinction between what I can do as an individual believer and what the church can do. If I can do everything the church can do, and the church can do everything I can do, and the church can't do what I can't do, and so on, if there was no difference between the individual and the church, this would make no sense. And all of the qualifications he gives here, he we're not go through all of them, but he says, having been the wife of one husband. What if my mother was a widow and she married someone else and then that second husband died? Could I take care of her? Could the church? She cannot be enrolled, according to this passage. And so you just go down. You can read the rest for yourself. They're just like with elders. We look at the qualifications. Here they are. Paul set them forth. But the point of it is, he's making a distinction between the individual in the church. And that is clear as day in that passage. Here's another one. Matthew chapter 18, verses 15 through 17. Moreover, if your brothers sin against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not hear, take with you one or two more. So two different situations. One is a one-on-one situation. The second one is at least two brethren and then perhaps three will go. So you have one situation with one and then with a few brethren involved. And then, of course, if he will not hear, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word may be established. And then he says, if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the church. So there's a distinction, isn't there? A distinction between the church and one individual Christian, and a distinction between the church and two or three Christians working together. Like every time two or three Christians do something together, that's not the church acting. And we need to understand that. It's a distinction. And Jesus makes it clearly in this passage. So when you look at these passages, you really have to ignore the truth that they're setting forth to come up with the wild conclusion that everything the individual can do, the church can do. And when you do come to that conclusion, it just opens up the floodgates. Like, it allows then the church, because there's a lot of things we can do as individual believers. Most of the authority that we have to live and to act as individuals is generic in nature. There's some specific authority. It's like, it's almost the very opposite of the church. There's some things with regard to the church that we can do because of generic authority. But when it comes down to the work and the worship and the organization, those things have been specified. With regard to the individual, there's very few. I mean, the Bible couldn't fit all the, you know, just individual specific instruction for all of our lives. We operate with generic authority. So there's a whole lot to do. Once you come to the conclusion the church can do anything that the individual can do, you just open up the door for about anything. And that's what some people want. That's what brethren want. It's an easy way to authorize whatever it is you want to do. The problem is, it's not scriptural. There is a difference between the church and the individual. And there's some things that the church can do that the individual Christian can't do. There's some things that the individual Christians can do that the church can't do. We saw that in 1 Timothy 5. Here, this is not specifically stated, but implied in all of this, that if a person is in sin and won't repent, ultimately the church will have to take disciplinary action. You know what I can't do as an individual? Have a falling out with you and say the Brown Street Church withdraws from you. I can't do that, can I? No, withdrawal is a process taken by the church under the leadership of the elders. But it's an action of the entire local church. Do it together. It's not one individual who can do that. Clearly, there's a distinction. And so we just have to keep that in mind going forward, because you'll see in some of the lessons that we come up to, a lot of people want to take passages that deal with individuals and apply it to the church. And they want to make arguments that, well, as I said last week in closing, I think, well, if I can play basketball as an individual, then because the local church is made up of individual people, then we can just, the church can build a gymnasium. And so, but they need this distinction not to be there in order to make that argument. So then the second thing, and just obviously something supported out of the treasury of the local church. So anything that we use the Lord's money for becomes the work of the Brown Street Church. And so it's very important that you realize, it's important that you know, you should know exactly what we're doing with the Lord's money. Because whatever we're doing with the Lord's money, you're doing. Because you're a part of this local church. Your money is yours until the moment you put it into the collection on the first day of the week. By the way, we'll get into this more. That's the only way for the local church to raise money. It's on by the first day of the week offering. No other way. Not by pie sales or washing cars or anything like that. To do the work that God has given us to do, we fund it by the first day of the week offering. And the moment you put your money into that collection plate, it's no longer yours. Before that moment, you can do whatever you want to with your money, as long as it's not sinful. Once you give it to God, it now belongs to Him, and we can only use that money in authorized ways. And whatever we do with that money, that's our work. You go back and you look on the finance report back there, and all the preachers that we're supporting, you're supporting. And so, you know, you just want to make sure that what we're doing is right in scriptural, because you're a part of that. It's your fruit. It's my fruit. It's our fruit together. It's the work of the Brown Street Church. So, anything that, what makes something the work of the church? There it is. Something planned, provided, and participated in by the local church, and something supported out of the treasury of the local church. All right? Now, the question is what we do at Brown Street scriptural or unscriptural? And we want to make sure that it is scriptural. So, all right, let's get to the business then of what the work of the church is not. It is not to bring about a social reformation, nor to be a social institution involved in social activities. That's not the work of the church. It never has been. And most people believe it is. The majority of brethren believe that it is. But every denomination believes it. And so we need to realize, where is the passage that would say that social reformation? In other words, it's not our work as a local church to fix all of the problems of society. And again, it never has been. Do you see Paul ever trying to lead the church down a path where local congregations were trying to fix the difficulties of that day in the first century? No. You don't see that, ever. They had a lot of social issues, a lot of social problems. In fact, society was a mess in the first century. You want to know the truth about it. But Paul never gathered together a bunch of church leaders. He never got together elders or a bunch of local churches and say, hey, we need to make a stand together against this. That's not the work of the church. Never has been. Now, what will change society is the gospel. But the only way we can do that is by changing individuals one soul at a time through preaching the gospel of Christ. Every time someone obeys the gospel, society gets a little bit better. Now, that's not going to fix society as a whole. Society is always going to be a mess. It's always going to need reforming. It's just not the work of the church to do it. Our work is to save souls, bring people to Jesus. And so that's not the work of the church. What that means is we cannot plan, participate, and provide things that fall into that category for that purpose. We cannot use the Lord's money for these kind of, for social situations. That's not our job. Here is a quote that I have put up for years, and I believe, I don't have it listed here, Harry Goldman, but I think it's from 1950. Goes way back. And he said, he's a Jew. He said, if I were faced today with the decision my ancestors faced, become a Christian or die, I would pick a church fast. There is nothing to offend me in the modern church. The minister gives a sermon on juvenile delinquency one week, reviews a movie the next week, then everyone goes downstairs and plays bingo. The first part of the church they build nowadays is the kitchen. Now, just think about that. Again, he's a Jewish man. He's just telling you, man, if I had to pick a church, if my life was threatened, I'd have no problem joining a church because all they do is social stuff. Now, do you think from the 50s to now things have gotten less social or more? A lot more, way more. And that's what we're faced with. That is not the work of the church. Now, all of these things then, it is not the work of the church to provide recreation, entertainment, ball teams, basketball courts, movies, etc. And brethren do that kind of stuff all the time. When I was preaching in Long Beach, California, there was a big congregation down the road somewhere, and they would often use their auditorium to show movies. Like, not, hey, Samson Delilah's come out. Let's do that. No, I'm talking about Rambo or whatever. And that's how they would raise money. They would charge for tickets. I don't know how in the world they got those movies, but they did. They were in the end, whatever. We'd see advertisements on their the thing all the time that they would be showing movies. And that's how they raised money. That was a form of recreation. To them, everybody wins. We're entertained and having fun at the same time and raising money for the church. It's a mess. But basketball courts, people, all of that very, very popular today. Used to be, we always talk about the fellowship halls, and then now, of course, they went to the multi-life centers. All for recreation. Now, you wonder why we call brethren liberal. And let me say this. I'll use the word liberal throughout this series. I'm not going to not use that word. Brethren get all worked up anymore. Don't call them liberal. We ought not to use it. It's offensive. I'm not using it in a nasty way at all. There are fine brethren in liberal churches. Great character. But they're liberal. That's just what they are. We're conservative. It's what we are. They'll call us anti. I own that. I'm anti. I'm not anti everything, but I am anti institutionalism. I am anti social when it comes down to the work of the church. Hope I'm not generally anti social, but when it comes down to the work of the church in the social gospel, and you call me anti. I'm against it. So we are what we are. So just know, I'm not going to stop. And every time I say liberal, call someone liberal, just know I'm not meaning it in an ugly way. They're liberal. They're just liberal in two ways. They're liberal in their spending of the Lord's money, and they're liberal in their definition of the work of the church. For example, they'll say, I've talked with them many times over the years about that. Where's the authority to build a gymnasium? You know what they'll say? Evangelism. What do you mean? Because we bring people in. When we have a basketball court, we open it up for everybody, and non-Christians come, they play basketball, then we teach them the gospel. So the gymnasium is a tool of evangelism. You know what that is? A very liberal definition of evangelism. It's so liberal, it's wrong. That's not the definition of evangelism. But they have a wide view of that part of the work of the church. So anything that might draw somebody in, they'll say, oh, no, that's just a part of evangelism. Remember when brethren used to have, they used to have buses and they bring people into their vacation Bible school when it was in the morning, mostly just for kids, have candy under the seat to draw. You know, oh, that's a great trick. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. It entices people to come. And so, but you can't fit recreation into the real definition of evangelism. And so this is not the work of the church. It never has been. Keep this in mind. In the first century, they loved their games too. Their form of recreation may have been different than ours, but they were involved in recreation, fun and frolic and all that. Find one passage where the church uses the Lord's money to engage in that. Just one passage anywhere. You'll never find it. This is why you have to keep Colossians 3:17 in your mind. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. Put your finger on the passage. If you can't, what is it? Just wrong? What is it? It's sinful. That's what it is. When people are turning the work in the church to fun and frolic and recreation and those kind of things, they are sinning. Not just something, oh, you all just don't like it. It's far deeper than that. It's sinning. They're doing something unauthorized by the Word of God. And we have to make sure as conservative brethren, listen, in years past, we all believe that. But as this, you know, let's everybody get along and unity and diversity has taken hold in not only in denominationalism, but even among us, where, yeah, they do this, but that's all right, isn't it? Not too bad. We have to connect the dots. Yeah, go ahead, Matt. Right. Right. And that's their position.
He was trying to infiltrate the very, little couples here and there.
Right. We're not paranoid. We're not making this stuff up. It's what people believe. And all of this stuff, like, there's some things that we'll talk about that maybe, I know for a fact, there's some things, like, I used to be with liberal brethren, and I didn't hear any of this. So I wouldn't know what you were talking about if you brought up institutionalism. But make no mistake about it, in liberal camps and institutional churches, the leaders know exactly what the issues are. Like, it's not like they haven't read 1 Timothy 5:16, and then, you know, they just need to go back and read stuff. They've read it. They disagree. They've taken their position. They're dug in. They believe anything the individual can do, the church can do. And so that's, you know, you have to decide. Yeah, I mean, we all, you, for yourself. Like, listen, you shouldn't be conservative just because maybe you happen to be, maybe your grandparents were a member of this church and now they're gone and you're a member and you don't really know why. But I tell people, we are institutional brethren. It's what we are. If you're a member here, you should agree with that. You should be a did I say institutional? Non-institutional, sorry. You should be a non-institutional individual. You should be opposed anti-institutionalism, period. Because that's what we are at Brown Street. So, yeah.
Kind of coming from that background of, you know, where anything goes, basically, they actually use Colossians 3 to justify what they do because they forget about the first part of the verse and they say, do everything in the name of the Lord. So they use that part of the verse to justify, oh, but we're doing it in the name of the Lord,
yeah,
so it must
right,
be okay.
Right.
You know, and that's, I mean, the old church I used to go to, I mean, we had, like, a festival we put on with, like little rides and, you know, I mean, all kinds of stuff for people to do.
Yeah.
But we justified it because we were doing it in the name of the Lord.
Right.
And that's how a lot of them get, you know, view it.
Right, right. Because they don't even realize what in the name of the Lord means. Yeah. And so that's another issue, and that's all related, but that is how people justify things. Some people think all you got to do is throw out that term in the name of the Lord, and boom, it's authorized.
And that's how we get away with, like, you know, musical instruments and all
right,
stuff kind of like that. Say, well, we're doing it in the name of the Lord.
Do it, yeah. But the only way you're doing something in the name of the Lord is if you can put your finger on the passage. If you can't, it's not in the name of the Lord. All right, did I see another hand? Go up. All right. So all of these things now, not to provide secular education, build colleges, preschools, etc. And there's a lot of colleges that are supported by local churches of Christ. There's even high schools that are supported by local churches of Christ. So that's not the work of the church. You've heard me say it's not the work of the church to provide 1, 2, 3s, ABCs, and 1, 2, 3s to children. And the church is not a babysitting institution. There's no authority for daycare centers or anything like that. It's not the work of the church. It's not to go into the money raising business. How do we raise money? To do the work that God has given us to do? The first day of the week. That's it. I have known of churches to buy apartment buildings and rent them out to raise money and help poverty at the same time because it's low rent. I mean, there's a reason behind all of it. And their hearts might be in the right place, but it's not the work of the church. And anything that's not the work of the church is sinful. Now, when we look at all of this, that's what we call, these things are what we call the social gospel. And again, the world has gone crazy with the social gospel. It's why back in the 50s even, the man, Harry Goldman, said what he did. I'd join a church, quit. Not going to offend me. Just going to play some bingo and eat some meals in the kitchen and get involved in some entertainment. It's like kind of like a club. I could do that and still be a Jew. Not any problem. I don't believe in Jesus, but I can join this club because that's what local churches have gotten to. They're social clubs more than anything else with a dab of religion. Preach a sermon on Sunday. You remember, I tell you all the time in the Church of Christ, of the individual who got up from the pulpit, and because they weren't going to play bingo that day or whatever they do, they were going to cancel it. He got up in the pulpit and said, there'll be no fellowship today. So I guess singing and praying and observing the Lord's Supper and all of that, that's not fellowship. That's how they view all this social stuff. And it has gone absolutely crazy. What's wrong with the social gospel? Number one, it distorts the mission of the church. Jesus did not die on the cross so that we could have a bowling club. That's not why he came. So that we could associate with each other, eat together, and our church financed fellowship hall. That distorts the mission of the gospel. Jesus came to seek and save that which is lost. That's the work of the church. To help the needy, that's the work of the church. And we'll talk about that, because even that is limited, but we'll get into that later. And to edify, to build people up, not physically, but spiritually. That's the work of the church. And so when we get involved in all the social stuff, it distorts the mission of the church. And because that's been so popular for so long now, it's in the psyche of people. People believe that a church is not a church unless it's involved in all of these functions. And when people look for a local church, the first thing they want is, you know, what can you do for us? What kind of programs do you have for the children? What can we get involved in from a social standpoint? And so it distorts the mission of the church. It devalues the power of the gospel. Remember the candy under the seat? The trunk and treat, or treat and trunk, whatever, for Halloween. All of these gimmicks. If you think you need a gymnasium to bring people in so then you can preach them the gospel, that's saying, I don't believe the gospel is powerful enough to do it all by itself. Need some help. The last time I checked, the gospel is the power of God unto salvation. It can win souls, and we know it. They did it in the first century. They won souls by the hundreds without fun and frolic, without recreation and entertainment, without secular education, without any of that. Just they preached the word, and people were saved. And we can and we must do the same thing today. That's the work of the church, not this. And finally, I think that was the second bell, right? All right. So, but it diverts the attention from the cross to carnality. And I'll give some examples of that next week. And then we'll start getting into what the work of the church is in the next several lessons. But that's what it's not. It's not social. And so when we get involved in that, connect the dots. It's sinful. Brethren who are doing it, they're sinning. They're not just doing something, bad judgment. It's sin. That's why we have no fellowship with liberal churches. All right, we'll pick up there next week.